I was at dinner last night and I got a call from Mike and he says, I'm conveniently stuck in Telluride. You're preaching tomorrow morning. So when I decided I'd be the youth minister at the Heights, I had no idea that they were going to do that to me on my first real Sunday. And then to make it worse, Jim, he sends me a text last night that says, hey, this is a picture of me laughing when I found out you're preaching tomorrow. So, but I'm glad to be here this morning. So, well, we're going to listen to Jesus tell us a parable about a Pharisee and a tax collector who went up to the temple to pray. It's in Luke 18, verses 9 through 14. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. When I was 5 or 6 years old, about 20 of our family members decided we were going to go on vacation from Arizona to Colorado, so we all piled in several motorhomes. And for a six-year-old, it's not that fun just to drive around Colorado. But I loved to sit in the front of my grandpa's motorhome because it had these huge windows and I could see out, see the mountains, see the pine trees. But I would ask thousands of questions. And like six-year-old questions. Grandpa, why don't the clouds fall out of the sky? And he said, I don't know. We'd pass a graveyard. Now, this is secondhand information. I don't remember these. They told me this. We'd pass a graveyard. And what's that? Well, that's where we bury dead people. Well, why do you bury them? Why don't they get up? And so after about an hour, he would get on the CB radio, because there were no cell phones really then, and say, hey, Patty, I think you need to take Brandon back because he's really getting on my nerves. And so I would go over to my parents' motorhome, do the same thing for about an hour, and then they'd send me back. And the funny thing is, Joy does this to me too, because I still ask a lot of questions. Like when I was learning about loans and I was trying to figure out what this amortization junk is, she would call my mom and say, I think you need to take Brandon for a while because he's getting on my nerves. And so when I read scripture, I read it with this same kind of inquisitive spirit. I really want to get into the story, ask the right questions. And this parable about the Pharisee and the tax collector usually is interpreted as a parable about prayer. And the lesson is, pray like the tax collector with a humble heart, but don't pray like the arrogant Pharisee. And that's good. That's good advice. You shouldn't pray with an arrogant heart. But I think if we ask the right questions, even if they're a little bit annoying, we'll find out that this parable really isn't about prayer. It's about the outrageous nature of God's grace. So the first question I want to ask this morning is just, who were these guys? Who is the Pharisee? Who is the tax collector? These aren't just some made-up stories and some made-up characters in a made-up story. These were actual people who lived in the first century. Who were they? Now, usually with the Pharisee, they have the bad rap. We think they're the bad guys because Jesus criticizes them a lot. They try and trick Jesus a lot. They back him into corners. But they're really not the bad guys. And the reason that Jesus criticizes them so much is because they're the leaders. They're the ones who have the most influence on the Jews. So the ones who have the most responsibility in teaching also have the most responsibility in the way they live their lives, and that's why Jesus criticizes them so much. So by all external appearances, this Pharisee is really the one who does everything right. Like he says in his prayer, he tithes more than he should, he fasts more than he should. Really, he follows the law almost perfectly. So the Jews would think he's almost the perfect person. He's the spiritual superhero. But then you have the tax collector, who's the bad guy. The tax collector is a Jew who would take money from other Jews in the name of Rome. See, Rome might require $100 for taxes, but he would take $300 and pocket the extra two. So the Jews hated the tax collectors, and they wanted them to have absolutely nothing to do with their religious life. They just assumed that they were gone, out of the picture. So we have these two people. You have this tax collector who seems to do everything wrong, and the Pharisee who seems to do everything right. That's how the story starts. So the next question I want to ask is, why do they go up to the temple to pray that day? Like, what happens in their lives that causes them to go up to the temple and pray? And I think the Pharisee, this is part of his routine. He deserves to be at the temple because he's the one that does everything right. He's the kind of person that's at church whenever the doors are open. And he should be, because he's the one who seems to do everything right. So he gets up to the temple, and yes, his prayer is kind of arrogant. He uses the word God once and the word I five times. God, thank you that I. Very self-centered prayer, but he's thanking God that he lives a righteous life. Right? At least he's not like this terrible tax collector. Yeah, his prayer might be a little bit arrogant, but at least he seems to be a good person. The Jews would actually pray this prayer. This is an actual prayer that they would pray around the time of Jesus. And this is the prayer. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, that you have set my portion with those who sit in the house of study, and you have not set my portion with those who sit in street corners. For I rise early and they rise early, but I rise early for words of Torah, and they rise early for frivolous talk. I labor and they labor, but I labor and receive a reward, and they labor and do not receive a reward. I run and they run, but I run to life, and they run to the pit of destruction. So you see the Pharisees at the temple thanking God for his righteous life, and it's really not that out of place. This was common. But I'm surprised that the tax collector's there. And I'm surprised because really he shouldn't be there. He's the one that steals the money from the people that deserve to be in the temple. And you know what? I kind of think he knows that he's not wanted there. So what leads him to the temple? Surely he just doesn't wake up one morning and say, you know, I think I'm going to head up to the temple and say a quick prayer for good luck. I think that something happened in his life that led him to the temple that day. Like a last resort kind of decision, a last ditch effort. The kind of decision you make knowing that, oh, I just really don't want to do this, but it's inevitable. Maybe after stealing money from people year after year and seeing how it hurt their families and how the love of money leads to emptiness, he just decided, there's nothing in my life that's worth anything. Maybe his wife had cancer. And after years of throwing money at his wife's cancer, the doctors finally told him, there's nothing else we can do. His money's not good anymore. Everything he's built his life on isn't good. So he goes up to the temple to pray, and here's what's interesting. He stands at a distance up in the back where no one will see him. He kind of hides in the shadows because he knows that the people don't want him there. And you know what? I bet he wonders, does God even want me here? Does God want someone like me praying to him at his temple? So he prays the only thing he thinks God will hear. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. He asks God to have mercy and grace on someone who doesn't deserve it. He asks God to have mercy and grace on someone who doesn't deserve it. So imagine when Jesus is telling this parable, how the people must have felt when he says, it's the tax collector that goes home justified, not the Pharisee. It's the one who steals your money, who seems to do everything wrong. He's the one that goes home justified, not the Pharisee, not the one who seems to do everything right. I bet they were shocked, but I bet more than that, they were just angry. It's like when God tells Jonah to go preach to the Ninevites and he says, no, Are you kidding me? Because if I go preach to the Ninevites, I know that you'll forgive them, and I don't want you to forgive them because I don't like them. That's probably how they felt. But why is the tax collector justified and not the Pharisee? Why is the one who seems to do everything wrong justified, but not the one who's living a righteous life? Because God's grace is outrageous. It shatters our expectations. God's grace does not allow us to live in a world where God plays the game by our rules. It doesn't allow us to live in a world where we get to decide who is in and who is out. And it doesn't allow us to live in a world where we can pray a prayer, God, thank you that I am not like other sinners, as if we were different than them. When I was a freshman in college, I went to a school in Phoenix, Arizona called Grand Canyon University. And it was in the heart of Phoenix, downtown Phoenix. So there was a large homeless population that lived around the school, but the school was very wealthy, so the homeless people rarely ventured onto the campus. Well, every Monday night there was a worship service in a chapel on the corner of campus. And so this one Monday night, me and all my friends go up to the service, and I noticed this homeless man sitting in the back at a distance by himself, probably because he knows, you know, these rich Christians don't want me in here. And so I watch him for the whole service, and he kind of just sits back there. He won't look up like the tax collector. He won't look up because he's got this sense of shame, like, I don't belong here. Well, by the end of the service, he makes his way to the front, and he sits right in front of me. He looks awful, he smells awful, and he starts crying. And then he just starts praying this prayer over and over and over again. And I've never heard anyone pray a prayer like this because it's not common to hear curse words in prayers. And I'm not going to repeat it, so. But over and over again, he said, God, you are so blank awesome. Over and over and over. And so people tried to grab him and say, you know, you need to get out of here. This is not how you act in church. And I can remember, and I'm not proud of this, but I can remember thinking to myself, God, thank you that I'm not like this loser. Thank you that I have it together. Thank you that I know how to pray. Thank you that I'm a religion major who does everything right, that's studying to learn how to minister to people like this. Really, what I was saying was, God, thank you that I don't need your grace as much as this man does. That's exactly what the Pharisee was doing. God, thank you that I do not need your grace as much as this man. So who went home justified before God? When the homeless man went back to the street and I went back to my dorm, who went home justified? And so you have to ask this question, is God's grace outrageous enough that a homeless man who says the F word over and over in his prayer can be justified, but the religion major who seems to do everything right might not be? Is God's grace that outrageous? And yes, I mean, that's the message of this parable. God's grace is that outrageous. It's outrageous enough and big enough for all of us. And the only way you can fall outside of God's grace is if you pray a prayer, God, thank you that I don't need you as much as they do. Thank you that I don't need your grace as much as these sinners. The only way you can be outside of God's grace is if you think that you don't need God's grace. So what I don't want you to do, though, is leave here today thinking or praying, God, thank you that I'm not like this arrogant Pharisee. Because then you're doing exactly the opposite of what Jesus is telling you to do. What you should do is leave here today thanking God for his grace. We all need it, whether or not we're the person who seems to do everything right, the person who's in church whenever the doors are open, or whether we're the person who seems to do everything wrong. We all need God's grace. So our prayer this morning should be this. God, thank you that your grace is big enough for all of us. God, thank you that your grace is big enough for all of us. Would you pray with me? God, we really do thank you that your grace is outrageous enough, that it's big enough, that there's room for all of us, no matter what we have done. When we get established in our religious traditions, when we think that we have done everything right, thank you that your grace is outrageous enough to come in and turn our world upside down and to show us who is God. And God, thank you that your grace is big enough that when we mess up over and over again, that there's still room for people like us. God, thank you that your grace is big enough for all of us. Amen.